Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Loveline starts now.
Hey everybody, this is Loveline. I'm Dr. Drew, and I am delighted to welcome tonight Alanis Morissette.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
How many times, I'm going to move this thing even closer to you.
Bless you.
There you go. How many times have you done this show?
Probably fourth
Like three
time?
Or four times?
I think fourth.
And I realize I've never actually sat down and talked eyeball to eyeball to. It was always co-hosts, and we were
The triangle gets
The triangle
tricky.
Was there, was triangulation. And I've got a billion questions for you.
Great.
Now, you said, we were just talking a minute off the air, and I couldn't help myself, but Alanis told me that her parents got married when they were 21 and had you guys right away.
I'd say probably mid-20s they had us. I have a twin brother, and I have an older brother. So.
You have a twin brother?
Mm-hmm.
Was that weird being a twin?
It was great.
Why didn't I know that?
Because I didn't tell you
until
just now.
Twin brother. And then you grew up in Ottawa?
I did.
Did you spend your whole childhood there?
No, we lived in Germany for 3 years.
Well, how'd that happen?
My parents were both teachers. My mom for 18 years, my dad's still on and off to
this day. What'd they teach?
Everything.
Oh, they need him, need Alanis louder. No, test.
Test, test.
There we go, much
one,
better.
Two, you got it.
But now, wait a minute. What is going to Germany have to do with teaching everything? They go to the military base?
Yes, in Lahr. And they, you know, they had that sense of adventure, and kids fit into our lifestyle as opposed to we change our lifestyle
to
suit kids.
Was that kind of painful?
I just missed my grandmother. It was devastating.
Really? And that's whose mom?
My mom's mom.
And she was the person that you really connected with and were close with? Did you lose her? I mean, you get to spend more time with her after that?
Yeah.
Or did she
came back, all was well.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And so you were there from when to when? Like, how old were you?
3 to 6.
3 to 6. And then your grandmother, she's still around, or she?
She's still here.
Oh, my God. How old is she?
She is 83 at this point.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah.
And is there a grandpa?
Nope. I have a new grandpa, my older
brother.
A
new grandpa?
A new grandpa. She remarried 15 years ago. My older brother set her up on a blind date with her now husband.
Oh, that's awesome.
In their 60s.
Does she live up in Ottawa, or did you bring her down here?
Ottawa. She comes visit.
You got to bring her down here. I mean,
oh,
she's going to slip and break her hip or something. It's too cold. No, seriously.
That's what I've been saying.
Yes.
Do you tell her
a doctor told you that it's very dangerous?
Yeah,
I'm going to
do that.
Yeah, please. I'm telling you. There's lots of great care here. The communities
Absolutely.
For elder people. It's perfect.
It is.
I mean, where's she going to go? Florida? Come on. Her daughter, her favorite granddaughter lives in Southern California.
Only granddaughter.
Only granddaughter.
Yeah, and I told her that she has a room in her house. I don't know. She's sniffing out the option.
Now, our house, you and Ryan Reynolds?
Yes.
You guys are living together and you're engaged? And. When?
Gonna be married. I don't know when. The whole pressure, you know, of as soon as you're engaged, the next obvious question is when you get married. But engagement is engagement.
Yeah, yeah. I'm into long engagements.
I love sussing and figuring out how to navigate and
how to live together.
Like.
Yeah.
How to be married. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, the really question everybody wants to know is when are the kids coming? Let's get serious here.
That is the next question.
Yeah.
Within the next year or two or three. Be more nebulous.
Someday.
He's ready to go, though. So.
Oh, really? Ryan is, huh?
Yeah, he's
That's
ready.
Interesting. He's Canadian also.
Very.
And you guys, he lives in Vancouver, right?
He's from Vancouver, yeah.
Does he live up there now? He lives here with you.
We go back and forth, but yes.
I didn't know you were coming this week, and I just happened to have seen The Lovely again.
Huh.
And I really liked that film.
I really liked that film, too.
Yeah, you were great in that.
Thanks.
And it didn't get a lot of play in the theaters, did it?
I don't know. It was. I don't really.
It seemed to be around for. I mean,
that,
but
so.
I really, really, really liked it.
That's
I was,
so sweet.
Yeah, and
great
you
story.
And some of the other, great story, great acting, great
the
performing.
Autobiography or biographies in general I'm a sucker for those.
But I mean, Kevin Kline, unbelievable, right?
I know. And Cole Porter's story and his lyrics and his little whimsy vibe is the greatest.
Yeah, it was really good. Well, I think it's going to have a huge life on DVD because it's so something you can really just sit down and just kind of live with for a couple of days. I wanted to watch it again, you know.
Yeah, really.
All right, Alanis Morissette in here tonight. We're going to go to calls. You ready?
I am so ready.
All right, good. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. Should I start with some softballs, just some Alanis questions, or you want to get some hardballs going right away?
How can you tell which are which?
I see. Let me give you an example.
Some have red.
Let me give you an example. No. I just scanned through them, and here's one.
Okay.
Alanis, what inspires you to write such deep songs?
Okay.
Softball. Here's Jeremy. Girlfriend's vagina used to be tight. Now it's like an anaconda ripped it. Hardball. Which would you rather have?
Let's start a little. Let's go slow.
Easy. Go
let's
easy.
Baby step in here.
All right. Mandy. Oh. Let's see if I get her. Mandy, you there?
Yeah.
All right. Mandy's 14. What's going on, Mandy?
I just wanted to ask Miss Morissette where she got the inspiration for her songs and how she got started.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for asking. When I first started writing songs, it was an imperative. I was dying to write.
How old were you?
I was 10 when I first started writing songs.
And was piano your instrument then, or?
Piano. And I started a label with a friend of mine because no one wanted to sign me because I was 10 years old.
Out of kind of fun or serious?
Somewhat serious. I didn't think it was odd then, but now in retrospect, I think it was really messed up.
Did an adult help you with that?
Yeah, my friend was an adult man, a friend of the family's. So I started writing songs, and what inspired me, you know, what was going on in my life at the time. When I was younger, it was all fictitious, the subject matters. But then as I got older, especially when I wrote Jagged Little Pill at around 19, it was all, you know, what was happening in my life. I just took my journal entries and turned them into songs.
Wow. And, of course, so other young women could relate strongly to that, because it wasn't, the stuff you're going through is sort of 19-year-old stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That was a bad guy, Jagged Little Pill?
Oh, there were probably about 3 or 4 in there. It's a composite, usually.
Of guys, of bad guys.
Yeah. Well, whatever bad guys mean.
You tell me. I got some ideas.
Do you?
I talk to them all night here. Or people are calling about bad guys. I mean, they, you know, some guys, you know, men have different motivational priorities. Their biology screws
but
up.
But I'm learning about men, and I'm learning to, you know, understand them a little bit better.
And they become human beings again in their 30s. Mm. They do. But before that, they are under the influence of a drug, testosterone, and it makes them crazy.
Right. But if you can understand that, you can cut them a lot of slack, don't you think?
You can cut them slack, but you have to understand how simple and simple-minded and direct, and it's just very narrow,
very,
very simple, very focused.
Yeah.
And most women, I find, have sort of, it's sort of painful to really come to terms with that. It's like,
painful
really,
for who? Painful.
For women. It's like, really, that? It's anything more?
I think if you know that, then you don't take it as personally, though, which I think is a good thing.
It is a good thing. And by the way, it's not that the men are less human.
No.
They'll be human again. It's just for the time being, they're not very human.
I think they're human, but they're a little more, you know, there's this single
single focus, single minded, which is, you know, how you build bridges and dams and things like that.
They're
too.
Very effective.
Very, very. Yes. Driven is the word. Jennifer, 26.
Hi.
Hey, Jennifer, you're on with Alanis Morissette. What's going on?
Hi, Alanis. I love you.
I love you.
Everybody does love Alanis, right?
Yes, they do, absolutely. Well, I just had a question about an HIV test that I had last year.
Mm-hmm.
I had it probably last December. Well, it would have been 2004, December 2004. And the results came back positive. And
The antibody test came back positive.
Correct.
All right.
So they went on to do a confirmatory test.
Right.
And it was negative.
Good.
So then the doctor decided to do what's called a viral load test.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was negative.
Good.
And I guess my question is, how common is a false positive and how concerned should I be? Because I am obviously very concerned. And
Not concerned. Do not be concerned. That's why we have confirmatory tests. That's why we tell people to retest if there's any question, that it is a screening test. So the idea of a screening test is not to miss any positives. But if you're going to take a big, wide blanket of results like that, you're going to get a few negatives that are represented as positive.
Okay.
You see? So it's negative. You're negative. You had the Western blot. You had the viral load. That's much more specific.
Okay. So I should not.
Are you at any risk for HIV?
No. I mean, I don't do drugs. I'm married. I'm recently married, so.
Why are you so anxious about this stuff? Why'd you get an HIV?
I don't think about it for a long time, and then one day I'll just start thinking about
it. No, why did you get it in the first place? For instance, the accuracy of a test is very much dependent on the probability in the clinical situation, the probability of it being positive. And so if you take and this is kind of a screening tool, so it's not that big a deal, but it's a screening test, so there are lots of false positives.
Okay. Well, I just went in for my annual pap smear and just decided to get tested for absolutely everything. And I asked for that.
Okay. Very good, Jennifer. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. This now is Alice, 22.
Yes?
Hey, what's up? You're on with Alanis Morissette, Alice.
Hi.
Hey.
When I was 22, I gave my child up for adoption, so it hasn't been that long.
Was that immediately following delivery, or was that if the child was a little older? What?
3 months.
3 months? That's tough.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Well, the father and I didn't really stay together, and I just didn't have any support from my family, so I didn't have any.
Personally, I think that's terribly courageous to go through a pregnancy and then to do what's right, best for the child. I think that's courageous.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But ever since then, like, I've just, like, found myself, like, sleeping with people and not really connecting and not really actually enjoying sex or wanting to have sex, but just doing it. And I can't seem to actually connect or get in a relationship, because once I'm in a relationship, I always end up sleeping with someone else or not fully committing.
What do you think?
What do I think?
It's pretty heavy, right?
Yeah, I would, you know, I would want to find out what, you know, what your motivation would be to be physical with someone. Would it be something you'd want to do right away with them when you meet them, as opposed to just spend time developing any sort of other connection with them? And, I mean, I'd probably want to spend a few hours with you, so I don't know if I have an immediate thought about it.
A few hours with Alice before you got a...
I'd want to ask a few more questions.
You could ask a few more, but I don't know about a couple hours.
I know,
here.
That's
but
my point.
And I think the point is well taken, that this is a complicated situation, Alice. But I will tell you that this is the kind of behavior that women get into sometimes after rape and after having felt violated in some ways. Now, people theorize all kinds of things about what makes people run around like this in sort of a destructive way.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, there are psychological theories that it's an attempt to regain control over or mastery over something that was traumatizing and made you feel powerless and out of control. I think in human beings, I brought this up last couple nights, that things that traumatize us for some reason become sources of attraction.
Mm.
Almost anything you can imagine in childhood that was highly traumatic, we turn that into something, we repeat it. We just are very apt to repeat it.
Dying to heal it, we want to repeat it.
Whatever it is, you know, our thinking is that we want to heal it, but I just wonder if it's just in our biology. It's just how motivation arises. And here's a situation where you've had something kind of traumatic happen, and rather than dealing with the trauma, you're acting out. You're just behaving. So, Alice, what about a little treatment on this?
I haven't gotten any treatment at all.
How about that? It sounds like you're really running away from... Let's think of it just in terms, just to conceptualize, as a way of running away from your feelings.
Yeah.
And that's going to keep... You're going to keep running until you crash. Mm-hmm. And unless you sit down with somebody and kind of sort it through, and it'll probably be a very simple matter and not very expensive and make you feel a lot better. And not harm yourself in the meantime. And you're going to get an STD. You're going to get pregnant again. Here's the extraordinary thing. What really traumatized her was that she got pregnant.
Mm.
So now what's she doing? Running around nearly getting pregnant again and going to get pregnant. Let me have a just curious question. Alice, do you use birth control?
Condoms.
And do they always work?
No.
Here we are. You're going to do it again.
Mm.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. I a quick sidebar. I was watching, of all things, Family Guy a couple nights ago.
I love that show.
Okay, well, Brian has a near-death experience, right? See the show?
I didn't see
and
it.
So what does Brian do? He goes out and decides, I got to live life up.
Jump
and he nearly killed. Yeah, nearly kills himself again. It's like the trauma of having nearly died makes us go out and do things we think,
right.
Oh, I'm just trying to live it up. I only live once. But the behavior is...
We're in that space, so
we're going to kill it.
It.
We're going to repeat it. And Alice is in that space. And unless something brings it to consciousness, she's going to get pregnant again. So
great,
Alice, please. This is Anna, 19.
Hi. I was wondering, Alanis, I read somewhere that you've had problems with, like, eating disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Like, I don't know. I've kind of been I've been struggling with that for a couple of years. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you got through it.
Yeah, I struggled with it between the ages of 14 and about 17 and a half, and I would fluctuate between bulimia and anorexia, just back and forth, and just balloon to...
Like, how did you finally get over that? Like, what made you be able to let go?
I went to therapy, and I had a therapist support me through it, someone who specialized in eating disorders, and I read every book I could get my hand on, and the two people who... come off the top of my head right now, this woman named Susan Kano, K-A-N-O, had a really great book that asked me to answer questions and write in the book and really participate, which was huge.
You were how old then, 19?
I started investigating at around 15.
15.
But I just kept going after that. And then a woman named Janine Roth, huge influence on me, reading her books. And just, you know, stepping into challenging society's messages, challenging the whole concept of never being enough and being asked to be perfect all the time in whatever way that, you know, whatever way that that I felt I could be perfect, whether it was through, you know, getting praise through being this young prodigy or looking a certain way. The tyranny of trying to be perfect and live up to whatever standards had to be looked at.
Did you ever read The Drama of the Gifted Child?
Mm-hmm.
That one kind of relates a little bit too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still struggle with it now, or is it gone?
Yeah, I still struggle with it every day.
Yeah, these are chronic conditions. They stay with you in some capacity.
But what I do realize when I travel, and it depends on what culture I'm in, if I'm in a culture that isn't very aesthetically based in the way that North America is, I don't struggle with it as much for obvious reasons. So, you know.
So, but I hope you heard the primary message, Anna, and that's treatment.
Yeah.
These are serious conditions, and they respond to treatment, right?
Very much.
Okay.
Right. Thank you very much.
All
and
right, good luck.
I've been a huge fan since I was like 8 years old.
So sweet. Thanks.
So, okay, Anna, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, get better.
Take care, yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
You know, along my little theory I've been sort of percolating with the last couple of days about motivation, I deal with a lot of eating disorder addict combination in my world. And the one, back to this thing about what motivates, one of the common experiences in childhood of eating disorder patients is a sort of an emotional starvation.
Mm.
It's like they can't quite get what they need from the people they need it from.
Right.
And here they are recreating the starvation again, physically, in real life.
Yeah, it's invisibility issues. This one beautiful woman that I've worked with a lot, her name's Margaret Paul, she created this process called inner bonding, and she was telling me that if I could feed myself in ways that I'd always wanted to be fed emotionally. Little things like even just touch, like my girlfriends and I, you know, hugging each other for longer than 30 milliseconds. Just, you know, sort of feeding myself in other ways that it would affect greatly all the other addictive stuff that I was doing. And like clockwork.
It
I
did.
Literally would sit there and my friend would hold me for 5 minutes. Very awkward at first, but eventually less awkward, understandably. But, days.
It makes sense, right? It's a dose.
Craving.
It's dosing, right?
Exactly.
Very interesting. All right, now I'm going to take the hardball.
Uh-oh.
Jeremy, 23.
You take this one.
All right, Alanis Morissette, but you won't be hearing from her. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hi, Alanis. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Oh,
hey, where are you
calling?
Hey, Jeremy, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Coon Rapids.
Coon Rapids,
Minnesota.
They put Coon Rabbits up here. I was like, really, Coon Rapids? Huh.
Yep. Well, Doctor Drew, I've been listening since I was like 14 years old.
Beautiful.
I think I finally have a worthy question for you.
All right, here we go.
I've never called in before, but, well, I met this girl about a month ago, and it was like, really tight, you know? Like, it hurt her to have sex with me.
Yeah.
And now, a month later, I mean, it's like an anaconda ripped through it or something. It's not the same as it was. And
are we supposed to conclude that you're the anaconda? Is that the purpose of the call? Are you wondering why the big change?
Well, why is this just a big change? I was with a girl for almost 4 years, and this didn't even come.
Yeah, basically, Jeremy is she's relaxed. She's comfortable with you now. That is not an abnormal thing you're coming across. Has she ever had children?
No, not even close.
So this just is all. Really, it's not that she has changed. Is that before when you were first getting sexual with her was when she was abnormal, and something that commonly happens to women. Sort of when things are new, and sometimes women happens chronically and recurrently, is they get a spasm of the muscles down there, and so things kind of tighten up, and it can even be painful or difficult to penetrate. And then once she kind of feels more comfortable with you, more open emotionally, things kind of go back to the anatomy that God intended.
Hmm.
Although I'm not sure he intended Jeremy to be with his girlfriend. So anyway, let's keep going here. Let's listen to a song. Mm-hmm. Hear a song?
Sure.
We've got planned Crazy, and then we're going to hear Wonderkind from Narnia. Once we get that all set up, we've got to unload it from the computer and whatever. But the first song, you want to sort of promo Crazy?
Sure, yeah, Crazy. I was doing a Gap commercial seven artists were to pick their favorite songs, and I picked Crazy from Seal. And then I was putting out a collection record that came out a couple of months ago and was picking a song to do that. As the first single, and then a gentleman named James Michael did a mix for it, and I loved it so much, so it became the first single.
Here it is.
We'll never gonna survive. together, they were friends at school.
Anderson, can I talk now?
Yeah, I said you're on.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's Alanis Morissette. The Collection. Crazy was the song. Very nice.
Thank you.
And we're going to hear more Alanis and more you when we come back after this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Love Line.
Love Line will be right back.
It's Love Line. The phone number here, 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. She is Alanis Morissette. And I wish the mic stayed on during the commercials. You missed such good conversation. Alanis was just telling me that she's going to spend the next year
or so
writing a book.
Yeah.
About?
It'll be about, you know, many different themes that have popped up throughout my life. I kind of approach writing in the similar way that I do songwriting, which is I let the song kind of dictate what it'll be about when I get in the studio. So
you don't know yet?
I don't know, but I have a sense of the fact that it'll be, you know, it'll cover everything from, you know, my journey through all that I've been through, spirituality. It won't be a memoir as such, but it'll be my own personal experience, really an act of service. I would love for this book to serve as a source of comfort and inspiration to people as they put it in their backpacks, you know.
Tell me more what you mean by that. Like, you think what you have to say in terms of things you've learned to help heal other people?
Things I've learned to help support other people in their healing journey.
And you mentioned spirituality. What sort of orientation do you have on that? Because that means a lot of things these days.
Non-religious, although there's pieces of religion. There's
connecting with something transcendent or
connecting with the source of all of life and realizing that our innate sort of, you know, core self is one of filled with well-being and joy. That's our natural state. You know?
And you and I were talking a little bit about the interpersonal experience. Isn't that where that's mostly felt?
Yeah, and I think part of what I'm ready for at this next phase of my life is to be able to actually connect with people one-on-one and have it be a little bit more personalized, because there's such beauty in performance and it's a really channeling experience and it is an act of service, but I also want another kind of sidebar of being able to support and serve people much more directly.
How'd you and Ryan meet?
I met him through my ex-boyfriend, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
And we didn't see each other for a couple of years after that.
Ryan and your ex-boyfriend were friends?
Mm-hmm.
Do they still speak?
not so much.
Nice. Well, oh, nice.
it's a torturous thing. But I didn't see him for 2 years. And then when we met up again, we were both single. So. But yeah, I've taken all kinds of trainings over the last few years. I've had a lot of mentors and I teach me and I adore being a student. So I think it's time for me to segue into teaching. Sharing some information.
I remember when you first came around, I don't remember if you called you well, or if I had an impression of you or something, but anger was something that was flying around for you back in the beginning.
Right.
I mean, you may have said it yourself. I don't really remember. What happened to all that?
It's still there, but it's just being channeled into a just much more passionate. I mean, reactivity is really what it was, you know. I think songs like You Oughta Know is where it all began, and that perception of me is being singularly angry all the time, 24 hours a day. And, you know, I can be reactive as anyone else can, but I had to write it in a song because I'd been repressing it for so long. I'd been pretending that I felt so good and that I was fine.
We're perfect. You're perfect for everybody.
It's perfect.
What makes you angry now?
Just ignoring what's going on with me and
when other people ignore you.
No. When I am not authentic, basically, when I'm, you know, forgetting myself and not thinking about what it is that I need and projecting or blaming with other people. But that's really just a responsibility version of it, you know. I don't really get that angry about stuff that's going on around me. I set boundaries much better now.
Yeah, I bet that's it. Hope people don't really understand what that means. We'll talk more about it.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah. All right, here is, oh my goodness. Let's take an Alanis question. This is Heather, 21.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell Alanis that I love you, and you're just such an inspiration.
Thanks.
And, oh, also, and I have a huge crush on Dr. Drew.
Awesome.
but you really helped me through one of your songs. I was having a really rough time with my relationship with my dad when I was a teenager, and when I heard your song, This Grudge, it just really kind of opened up my eyes and made me realize that I had to kind of let go of the person that he had been and accept him for who the new person
was.
Wow,
that's substantial.
Wow. That's
very,
so
very
great.
Evolved of you, Heather.
So great.
And I really feel like, you know, she had a part in helping me get my dad back, and we have a great relationship now.
Wow. That's so great to hear.
Well, thank you
so support
much.
You
got
it.
Congratulations. Yeah. Talk to you soon, Heather.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's take another hardball. Here we go. Ready?
Uh-oh.
Ashley, 20.
Hi.
Hey there. What's happening? You're on with Alanis Morissette.
Hi.
Okay, I have...
If she gets very quiet...
Sheepish.
Yeah, if she gets real quiet, don't be surprised.
Okay.
It kind of surprised me.
Okay.
Whenever a man and a woman are having sex, can the man pee inside of a woman?
That's a Drew question.
Yeah, thank you. I'm moved, proud. just a pleasure to your service.
We've been having an argument about it lately, and we can't.
Well, here's the deal. It's difficult for a man to urinate when he has an erection, and the more aroused he is, the more difficult it is.
Oh, really?
And while some guys have more or less difficulty than others, to urinate in the middle of a sexual act is a pretty tall order. I don't care what he's doing or where he's putting it. That's hard to do because there's a valve in there, a muscle that basically shuts things off.
Okay. Can I ask one more question real quick?
Of course. If it's as erudite as that last one, I'd be delighted.
What is a dental dam?
What's a dental dam?
Yeah.
It's a latex barrier that you put across your mouth, basically, so whatever your mouth touches doesn't get exposed to a body.
So does it stretch whenever they put their penis in there, or?
No, it's like if you were to take a piece of cellophane and stretch it over your vulva and somebody were to give you oral sex, that's how a dental dam was conceived of. Except they're not supposed to use cellophane, you're supposed to use latex. And you can take a latex condom, you can use condoms and actually cut the tip off so you have just a tube and then cut along the long axis of the tube and unfold it, and now you've got a dental dam. Okay?
Okay, thank you, Dr. Drew.
Happy to enlighten you. Let's take a kind of a medical question here. This is Jessica, 14. Jessica?
Hi, I was just wondering why I'm losing weight because I just got put on NuvaRing. It's like a birth control thing.
Yep.
And I'm on antidepressants. I'm on Zoloft and Triptal or something like that.
Trileptal? Trileptal can cut your appetite a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, well, I've like never had a problem with weight, but I've been losing a lot of weight. And like, it's almost looking like I'm anorexic.
Okay. Have you talked to your doctor about it?
No.
Okay, that's what you need to do.
I'm not my doctor.
Well, you're on a pretty heavy combination of medicines. You should be. You have bipolar disorder?
No.
Why the Trileptal then?
That's just mood swings or something.
Yes, because that's for bipolar. Mood swings is bipolar, same thing basically.
Well, I just was wondering why, because it just started when I was on my birth control, and aren't you supposed to gain weight?
I doubt it's the birth control. Well, you can, but some people kind of lean out a little bit with the birth control. It depends on how it's affecting you, but I bet it's the trileptal. You got to talk to your doctors. Desiree, 27.
Hi, Alanis.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I am a huge fan. I saw you at the Avalon, actually, not that long ago.
Oh, cool. That was
You're
a fun
awesome.
Show.
That was an Thanks. Awesome show.
Thank you.
Anyways, yeah, Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
I was recently in a 10-year relationship for so long.
And say that again? You've been in a 10-year relationship for so long?
Yeah. It just
10 years
like
is long.
More, you know what I mean, Alanis? You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to end is what you're saying.
You know, this fool drug me to hell and back. Alanis' songs, you have no idea how much they've helped me in so many ways to get past so many things. And I just recently, you know, came out of that relationship, and it just felt like it was forever. And I have, you know, two kids with this man. He just did me so dirty. But my question for you, Dr. Drew, is I'm 27, and is it normal for me to be this horny? I feel like my sexual peak has came on, like, a little early. And
well,
is it normal to...
Yeah, that, I know there's a lot of discussion of women peaking in their 30s, but I really think that biologically it's a little more of the 20s.
Yeah,
and,
really... You know, I guess after being with one person for so long and just actually being back single for, you know, just a...
So you're excited about that and that's fun for you?
Well, yeah, it feels good. I'll let you know, I forgot what it was like to have complete and utter freedom.
Are you on any medication?
Not within yourself, but within your, you know, within your life.
All right, Desiree, do you have any are you on any medication?
No.
Do you have any history of bipolar disorder?
Yeah, I do not.
Okay. Any history of sexual abuse or physical abuse growing up?
No.
Okay. And how long have you been feeling hypersexual?
Just for about 3 months.
And how many guys have you been with in that time?
Two.
It's fine. I think you just sort of feel liberated and having fun. And
no, I've only been two.
What?
I've only been two in the past.
I know. I'm saying that's fine. Yeah, I think you're just feeling.
Oh, I thought you said five.
Like, no. I'm just saying it's fine. You're feeling sort of liberated. That's fine. It's good times. Relax. I worry that you're going to be sort of.
No, I'm not really a promiscuous type of person. I guess, am feeling a little overwhelmed with the fact that you know having so much freedom after not having so much freedom for so long. You know, it just felt like he was one of those very controlling people, and I have you know. Two kids with him, and I thought it was going to be, you know, something I was going to have for the rest of my life, and it didn't work out that way, so it, like, all came to a halt.
Here's what I would watch out for. Desiree, one thing I watch out for. You may not be bipolar, but you sound a little manic-y, I got to tell you. And so I would keep an eye out for that one thing, that you might be sort of spinning a bit. So, yeah, no drugs, no alcohol. Easy on the drugs and alcohol.
Oh,
keep an eye on yourself. And then let me tell you a pattern that I encounter frequently with somebody like you is that you're with this guy for 10 years and you're like, oh, hell with relationships, and you start going out with a lot younger guys. Be careful of that sort of impulse.
I don't really have the feeling to be with younger guys because I don't really, you know,
right.
like to be with
good.
Somebody who's immature.
Good. Good. You're good. You're good to go. Desiree's good. Yes, you agree?
Yeah, I also think that when something ends at a certain place, the next relationship kind of picks up from where that left off, unless some
investigation
is...
When she was 17, she started picking up?
No, like 10-year relationship may end on a certain note.
Yes.
And then the thought may be, I'm going to start a new relationship, and it's going to be way better, and it's,
oh, yeah.
and the same stuff comes up.
Of course.
You know, so,
well, of course.
So,
well, we didn't even get into that one, right?
Yeah.
this is Zach, 21.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Zach? You're with Alanis Morissette.
What's up?
Hold on a second, Zach. We got the weirdest caller sound, or at least the sort of that kind of weird technical quality. Your name.
Mm.
That's an unusual name, right, Alanis?
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
My dad saw it in a newspaper. It's a Greek word that...
Are you Greek?
No, I'm French-Canadian and Hungarian and Canadian.
Greek word?
A Greek word randomly saw it. My dad's name's Alan.
Uh-huh.
So there's some...
You like that?
Mm-hmm. And I've come to find out
he was
out
21. He was a retarded 21-year-old.
Let's just have a little appendage version of my name. I've come to learn that it means the wolf in a family that leaves the pack, and everyone rolls their eyes about, you know, that Alanis that left the family. That's what many Greek people have told me.
It's like a vernacular?
Like a black sheep-ish character.
But it's a common Greek word. It's not something from ancient Greek or something.
No, common, and they say it when they're talking about the family member that kind of disappeared or went away or left the family because they didn't quite belong in that family.
Is it pronounced Alanis or Alanis?
Alanis. Yeah.
Whatever. 21-year-old. Shouldn't be having kids. All right, Zach, go ahead. Turn your radio down.
Yeah.
Zach.
What's up?
What's up, buddy? Zach, you got a chance to talk here. Let's go.
Hey, what's up? This is Zach.
We know.
What's up, Zach?
So I've known this girl for about 8 months or so, and we just started kind of dating or hanging out the last couple of weeks. And, like, I love the family to death. I'm starting to really like this girl. And so we were watching a movie the other night, and, like, I got kind of close to her, and, like, her breath. It's kicking bad, and, like, I can't get past it. And, like, I crashed over her house a couple nights ago, and, like, she brushes her teeth at night. She's got whitening strips in the bathroom, like, brushes them in the morning. And doesn't matter what she eats or she chews gum or whatever, but her breath stinks way bad. And, like, I don't want to say anything to her, but I can't get past it.
How do you think you should bring this up? Because actually, it's something that could be treated too, right?
There's
actually dentists sometimes that specialize in measuring the gases produced by the bacteria in the back of the tongue, and they have special ways of clearing that. It's a bacterial growth that causes this, and once that happens, you got to get it eliminated.
I know that I waited a really long time to share, you know, something of that kind with a person that I was with, and they were actually really upset that I waited as long as I did.
I would think so, but the flip side of that though is awfully hard to, unless you have a good. Open communication, you're just getting going,
maybe wait a minute or two.
How would you approach it?
I would say
because there's a point at which it gets weird too. It's like, or, there is that why didn't you tell me sooner component,
right, exactly.
That happens eventually.
I always find humor is great.
How about if you maybe you and I being, I have that same perfectionistic thing you have. Mm-hmm. I'd want to not blame myself but say I had this thing once, or I heard about it, or somebody I know had this, and I've noticed, or
being direct is always
be
good.
Direct, be honest.
Be direct, but you can also be humor filled about it, I think, too, because that can kind of cut the edge.
How funny are you going to be about bad breath?
I don't know. Just something funny.
He needs to break into some flatulence himself, and then
exactly.
Then it'll all be, he'll be, there'll
level
be nothing.
The playing field.
He'll be nothing compared
okay.
to him. All right, Alanis Morissette in here tonight. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. The new CD is The Collection. We have heard Crazy. We're going to hear Wonderkind from Narnia. Hopefully, is that getting set up? We're about ready. Okay, we'll soon hear some more music. But in the meantime, we're going to take a little break and be back with Alanis after this.
Yep, Loveline will be back.
Glad to hear it.
Loveline will be right back.
But it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Alanis Morissette is our guest tonight. We're going right back to calls. The CD is The Collection. We're going to hear the hit Wunderkind off of Narnia in just a few minutes. But first, this is Grace, who's 19.
Hi, Dr. G. Hi, Alanis. I love your music, Alanis. The lyrics, just everything about it is so beautiful, so touching.
Thanks.
And Dr. G, you're a genius. I listen to you a lot.
Thanks, Grace. What's up? Very kind.
Okay.
And what's going on?
Well, I have this boyfriend. We've been together maybe 4 or 5 months. And, I mean, from the beginning, it wasn't really, like, that great between us. And, you know, I was trying to find reasons to break up.
How did you meet this guy?
We met in the mall.
Nice. How old is he?
He's 18.
Mm-hmm. And so what's happening now?
He just recently became homeless.
Why?
And his family, last year his mom passed away, and he was living with his sisters in an apartment that their older sister was taking care of. But they got kicked out of the apartment. And now,
why did they get kicked out?
The landlord, the one that was, like, helping them out with the apartment, retired. So he had to close it down and sell it to someone else.
Okay.
And they're like Section 8, so they didn't support the Section 8, so they couldn't stay there anymore.
And where is his dad?
His dad is in the Philippines. Yeah.
Why doesn't he get a job?
He's going to school. My boyfriend's going to school, but he's not working right now. You know, I'm always telling him, you know, get a job so you could get a place and, you know, you could, you know, fix up that car, you know.
And what does he say?
And he says he's trying. Like, we go to the library, look up jobs and stuff, but, I mean, like, he sends out his resume and emails, but, I mean, it doesn't seem like he's trying hard enough. I don't know. Well,
what's he studying in school?
Medical assisting.
Okay. And where's he living now?
In his car. In his mom's car.
Good times. All right, what's the question?
Well, with all of, like, this kind of chaos that's going on with his life, I mean, like, since, like, I kind of went into his life, it's been, like, kind of being a burden on me, and I didn't really want to have that anymore. And now that it's, like, really, you know, getting bad on him, you know, I'm helping him out more and more, and it's just not something I want to do.
Yeah. Is he doing pot or something? He's smoking a lot? Is he doing drugs?
No, he doesn't. He's very clean. He doesn't.
No drugs.
No drugs, no drinking.
And why doesn't he go to the school and ask for some supportive services or take a student loan or something?
I told him, you know, like, maybe you could go to, like, Job Corps where, you know, they give housing and stuff.
Yeah, there's something, Grace, there's something glaringly missing from your story. And there's something wrong with him that he's not able to take advantage of the resources that are available to him. There's something wrong. And whether it's that he's doing drugs and you don't know it, or that he's profoundly depressed, or he has a personality disorder, whatever it is, there's a reason. He's going to school. He could get a job. He's a perfectly capable guy, and he's doing nothing. There's a reason for that. There is. And there's probably tons of solutions that the school could offer. Why don't you, just to relieve your own sort of guilt about this, why don't you go to the school? I'm sure they have various kinds of social services there, and tell them about that story and ask what's available. And if he doesn't take advantage of that, that's all you can really do. It doesn't sound like you should have to be burdened with the guy. I'm sure you care about him as a human being. It doesn't sound like you're involved with him romantically. You're not responsible to remain romantically involved as a matter of charity. Right, would you say, Alanis?
Yeah, finding out what way you could offer to him and see if he bites would be a great way to see if you want to be with him right now anyway.
Back to the hardball calls. 24, Megan. Megan. Okay, we'll leave Megan and go to Kelsey, 18. Kelsey?
Oh, my God. Hi.
Oh, my God. Here you are. You're on with Alanis Morissette.
Well, I guess I should say that I like Alanis Morissette a lot. And I heard you had an eating disorder, and I'm recovering from one, so.
Nice.
Mm. Way to go.
Yay for you, too.
Well, my question, I guess, ever since I've been, like, doing really well in recovery, I've been, like, hypersexual, I guess is the term.
Are you recovering just from eating disorder or from addiction also?
Oh, no, just an eating disorder, but then major depressive disorder also.
Okay, and were you bulimic?
Yeah.
And were you bipolar, or are you bipolar?
No, I have. They thought I had it, but then they re-diagnosed me with major depressive disorder.
And are you a trauma survivor? Were you sexually abused or physically abused?
Yeah, I was sexually abused by my brothers, but my mom told me that was normal.
Yeah, of course. I mean, who wasn't? It's perfectly normal, perfectly natural. Kelsey, not normal, though it does mean your mom was probably sexually abused.
Yeah, and
of course.
And then I was physically abused by my dad.
Okay, and that kind of abuse does tend to create a sort of a fluctuation between sexual shutdown and hypersexuality. And bulimia sometimes is associated with hypersexuality, just statistically. Go ahead.
So there's this 25-year-old that as soon as I turned 18, he asked me out, but he liked me for 4 months before that when I was 17. And we only dated for, like, 3 weeks, but then he, like, dumped me because he said I was addicted to puking and blah, blah, blah. And he is addicted to pot, but he says that normal people smoke pot.
What's not to love about this guy? Sounds great.
Oh,
go fight to get him back.
I don't know. He's just really good, like, at sex.
No. Well.
And I don't, like, I'm a virgin, and I haven't had, like, sexual intercourse with him. But, like, I'm, like, addicted to, like, being with him.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. I don't want to be.
Okay. Are you still in some sort of therapy?
Yeah.
And are you talking to your therapist about this?
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable talking about it.
Why?
I don't know. Because it's like I have so many other problems right now that seems like it's like the least. Like my dad.
It's a big one, Kelsey. It's going to lead to more serious trouble even potentially than the eating disorder since that's in remission right now.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. One of the kinds of common syndromes that develops when you've been sexually abused is, again, just as a way of conceptualizing this, there's no doubt that when something feels horrible and overwhelming and makes you feel powerless, magically that's something you're attracted to as a young adult. You go seek that out. You seek out the kinds of guys that are going to victimize you. There's also the fact that you kind of split off the part of yourself that is sexual, and it feels bad and feels dirty, and that's the only way you can experience yourself that way is with a guy who also you identify as sort of not so good.
Yeah, and like I have a bad relationship with my dad.
Of course, and here's the deal. What you need to do is integrate the good and bad parts of yourself and be a whole person and have a real relationship with somebody. Please talk to your therapist about this, okay?
There's
okay,
a great book, too. A great book called The Sexual Healing Journey by Wendy Maltz.
I'm writing all these things down. Sexual Healing Journey?
Yep, by right. Wendy Maltz. Amazing book.
All right, it's Alanis Morissette. That's the voice you're hearing. The phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. I'm Dr. Drew. This is Loveline, and we'll be right back. Everybody's love line 1-800-LOVE-191 in studio. Alanis Morissette, dear friend of the show. When you must have first come in here like 12 years ago.
It was early on.
My goodness, it was back in Burbank, I think. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
God, I'm old.
Ricky Rackman,
and you had a little conflict with him, as I recall. That was a former co-host.
I made the idiot move of saying that I wasn't sure I wanted to keep doing these kinds of shows. I was in conflict with everything at that point, but I think Ricky took it personally, and then he said something at a show, and then I reacted, and it was all stupid. Right?
That's awesome.
Whatever.
Okay, this is a question for Alanis. This is a Jennifer who's 20.
Hi.
Hey there, Jennifer. Alanis Morissette.
Hi. I just wanted to know, is it true that you're going on TV now?
We did a pilot based on just shooting a bunch of stuff backstage with my friends. I love structured scenes in which to improv in. One of my favorite things to do. So we shot that, and then we went to the next step with it, but I think it's going to end there.
Huh. Did it air?
Well, here's my problem. My problem is I can take something really beautiful, an inspired piece or a song or whatever, and this exploitive voice in my head says, you should turn this into something.
Well, that's not exploitive. That's just, it's just the business in which you operate.
Yes, but sometimes at the cost of being inspired, or sometimes at the cost of, you know, just wanting to, sometimes I just want to write something on a napkin and not turn that thing into something huge, you know, something I just want to have the experience of doing this fun thing with my friends and let it go.
Sound like Ayn Rand. It's too beautiful. I have to throw it down the garbage chute. It's too beautiful. It's too beautiful for human eyes.
Oh.
What's that, Jennifer?
If you wrote anything on a napkin and left it, I swear, like, anybody could be inspired by that. Everything you do is just beautiful. So,
thank you. I love sharing it. And I just want to make sure that I rejuvenate enough so that when I'm sharing it, that I'm actually happy doing it.
You've always been so, I mean, I'm watching you talk about your creative process, and it's pretty vivid. Mm-hmm. Has it always been that way, or is it something that developed?
Yeah, it's a humbling experience, basically. And most inspiring, well, you wrote a book, so you know, but it's...
Well, I didn't know, but I had the experience of something sort of popping out of me and somebody going, write more, about what? Just write.
Right,
I had no idea what she was talking about, but
right.
I sort of would go out with a tape recorder and go running, and anything that came out of my head, I'd sort of let it come, and then I'd go back and sort of write
flesh
off
it.
Yeah. And that to me was shocking.
Yeah?
It was shocking the stuff spontaneously came out of me.
Cool. And I think that process is so divine and you know, really inspiring. And I think when it turns into now go write something from an intellectual place that you may not be inspired to write, that's when the tyranny of, you know, workaholism starts for me. So to get back to the place of inspiration is always my MO. It's always get back to the place where there's nothing going on and I'm now writing because I have to.
And you started writing when you were how old?
When I was 6, I started writing poems, and then I wrote my first song when I was 9 or 10.
Did the process just, you discussed sort of briefly about not feeling so great about being out in Germany. Was it, did that make you feel better?
Writing?
Yeah.
It was my best friend, you know, in times where I felt misunderstood or whatever it was that I was feeling as a young person, writing songs was just my relief from it all.
Who were your other best friends?
When I was little?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what best friends mean. I mean,
you use the word.
Okay, so there's best friends as in I had a lot of friends, but in terms of really feeling
best friend like your writing.
I would say a friend named Cynthia, who I'm still friends with.
So another peer.
Yeah.
Not grandma.
Yeah, she was. It's a whole other kind of friend, though. Friend is such a subjective thing, but friend to me nowadays means really intimate. Like, I am known by this person, and I feel I know them.
And Cynthia lives in Ottawa still, or is she?
She's in Toronto, but she comes down a lot.
Is she a mother now, or a businesswoman, or what does she do?
No, she's an artist.
Artist. So yeah. You both are creative. How interesting. Mm-hmm. And she's somebody you connected with when you got back to Ottawa from Germany? Or
when I was older. I met her when I was 12.
You're 12. Mm-hmm. And then, did you go to college?
No.
And so you went through high school or grade 12, whatever you guys call it, in Ottawa?
Grade 13.
Grade 13.
Yeah, yes, I did.
And decided, you were already probably working.
Yeah, I had records out in Canada for my teen years.
Oh, my goodness, that's right. Was that weird?
It was weird, but it was great. I didn't know anything different, so it was what my reality was at the time.
And could you have a normal sort of high school experience?
I would go, you know, traveling, shooting videos at 14 and come back, and my parents would have written a note to explain my absence, and the teachers would say, this is not a valid reason for you to have been gone.
Well, interesting.
Those kinds of things.
Do you think that's why you got sort of some bad guys? that they sort of saw you as an object, and they didn't really care about you. They were just interested in, you know, the trappings of you.
Some of them, but not really.
Well, first of all, every 19-year-old kind of goes through the bad guy phase.
Right. It's a rite of passage.
Yes, you have to do that.
Whatever
bad
guy is. But I definitely, you know, I was just having fun as a young person in terms of who I was dating. But I you know, this is a long conversation about
well, you're back to a nice guy
I
now.
Why I made those choices,
okay,
yes.
You're back to a very nice guy now, so it's all good.
Lovely.
All right, let's talk about anger for a second. This is Sandra, 25.
Hi, Dr. Drew. I'm a fan of you and Alanis Morissette. But basically what I want to ask you is, I have gone to a lot of psychologists, but I always tell them what they want to hear, not what I need to get help from.
Hang on a second. Is that because you sort of can't help yourself when you're in a, you know, when the door closes in the room, or because you're afraid to tell people how you're honestly feeling?
I really don't know, but
I can't tell.
Like
okay.
I said, I've been listening to you, and I know that you get them. I mean, like you tell them if you're lying or not.
Right.
So I'm planning to make a trip to LA, and I really need some help. You don't know how bad I need it, and I kind of, like I say, I admire you a lot. And I was thinking either you can recommend me someone that has the same ability as you, as you know, to tell when someone's lying, or if I could see you for something, because I'm like really messed up. I'm holding myself together really, really well, but I don't know how long I can take it. I don't do drugs. I don't drink.
Do you have a history of doing drugs?
No, never. That's the only thing I have really, really clear in my mind is that I don't want to end up a drug addict or a drunk.
Do you feel like you could potentially be one?
If I don't get help soon, because, I was abused when I was little.
That's what it sounds
and,
like.
And by my family uncle and my great-granduncle and by, like, 12, 15 different guys, right now I can't really remember them, but I know that happened. I like girls and everything like that. My mother thinks it's because of the abuse.
Yeah.
I find myself with a lot of problematic relationships. I like chaos, I guess. That's the way you call it.
We got the picture. Yeah. Well, Sandra, you're sort of painting the picture of what's called a borderline personality disorder. And that's something that, you know, a single consultation doesn't really do much for. You've got to find somebody down there. I'm trying to think if we want a man or a woman. So part of me seems to think a woman might be a bad idea for you. And get in there and just get abjectly honest and go in 2 or 3 times a week and just somebody who's very talented and willing to commit to your case. The problem with Sandra with cases like yours is that they take a lot of time and a lot of energy. And most therapists can only take a couple of cases like that because it's very draining work. They have to go with you through all that pain and chaos. And that's what I recommend to you. You know, the University of California, San Diego has tons of great people down there. Take advantage of that. This is Megan, 24.
Hi.
Hey, Megan, what's happening?
Actually, it's been happening for a while. Thank you for taking my call. I don't know how to say it without, against the FCC, but, you know, sex between your breasts.
That'll pass.
I try to go every way around intercourse, you know, because I'm trying to be, you know, cautious and do other things, and I think I'm being safe. Well, all of a sudden, I have all these red bumps on my left breast, like, almost immediately, like, the next day. So I thought it was too quick, but they had lasted for several weeks, and they were all in a straight line, so that was kind of suspicious. And anyway, I finally went to a doctor because my friend said you could actually get herpes other places than your
That's true.
In your mouth.
That's true.
So,
and like, what did they tell you it was?
I'm sorry?
And what did they tell you this was?
So they tested me. I paid like $700, you know, no insurance, just to get tested. I really cared enough to. And they said it was negative. But I keep getting these bumps, and I don't know what else would it be, you know?
Did you see a dermatologist?
I'm sorry?
Did you see a dermatologist?
No, I haven't.
And what is it you're not having intercourse so you don't get infectious diseases? Is that why you're doing that?
Well, I don't have intercourse, but, you know, I have oral and everything else. So, you know,
why don't you have intercourse?
I have a lot of friends who have kids really young, and I just don't want to get knocked up anytime soon. And
so why don't you go on birth control pills and use a condom?
I just have too much of a fear, I guess. But, you know, that's not really the issue to
well,
me.
Well, it is the issue because it's sort of a peculiar, for a 24-year-old, it's a peculiar way to solve that problem. And then to be so anxious about STDs where because you get a little skin rash, you become immediately convinced of it being related to sexual transmission as opposed to going to see a dermatologist like you're supposed to and seeing what this thing is.
Yeah.
But the media, you're in a panic about an STD. What is all this?
I just figure it's safer than, you know, regular sex. You know?
Well, it's maybe a little safer, but not a lot safer. You're doing oral sex, and you said everything else, so God knows what else is included in that. And, you know, the whole, what do you think, Alanis, about the whole thing of women like having anal sex and oral sex so they remain a virgin? Mm. It's bizarre, right?
Hi. Yeah, I relate to it. I basically experienced that as a young person, too. I mean, whether it's religious, for me it was religious. I was told that...
Are you Catholic? Or
I was raised Catholic. So I was told that...
You were going to go to hell.
Not only go to hell, but that I was going to be, you know, frowned upon, the whore, all the et cetera.
But isn't it interesting that we've lost track of the idea of chastity? It becomes a technicality. You're a whore if there's intercourse. But go ahead and do everything else.
So I was labeled the virgin slut as a young girl because I would do everything but. And it was natural. I mean, a lot of my friends are doing the same thing. A lot of them were Catholic as well. So, you know, it's sad for that to be the line that was drawn.
And so what do we say to young women today? How do we help them with that?
I would have, I'd have a lot of conversations about sexuality and what it means, but it has to bring in the concept of religion too, and where these lines are being drawn within religion, because, you know, Mary Magdalene being considered a whore, and all these stories about Mary Magdalene that are so controversial right now.
With the Da Vinci Code
and everything,
stuff, yeah.
And it's such great, you know, great light being shone on it, but you know that it just is really wounding to a woman. Just ordinary society, whether it's religion or otherwise, is really wounding to a woman's development of her sense of her own sexuality and her body in general.
Well,
so,
but I want to hear more about it. Tell me, what do you think we ought to be telling young women?
I would have conversations with them about their body. I would introduce them to artists like, whether it's Eve Ensler or who else is another woman that writes a lot about, you just expose young women to, you know, some may consider it to be more kind of feminist literature, but just literature in general that allows you to embrace your body parts, your sexuality. Patricia Lynn Riley writes a lot about sort of reframing religion and spirituality in a way that can reframe what God is in a less masculine way. And
right. So, are you not considering yourself Catholic anymore?
No, I'm post-Catholic.
Post-Catholic, mm-hmm. Spiritual.
Yeah.
But this technicality thing, I mean, how can you talk them out of that? They're so convinced that they're going to be condemned if the penis passes the plane of the vagina, and yet everything else is going on.
Right. Well, even if I had had a conversation about it alone, that probably would have neutralized it for me.
So it was so anxiety-provoking, you couldn't even talk to an adult about it.
And then the jokes would keep coming, and you know, and my two brothers who were sexually active from a young age, you know,
also
and,
Catholic,
yeah, but they're, you know, they were given the green light. So
really,
oh yeah,
I thought boys were going to hell too for that.
No, I think they go blind if they masturbate. Isn't that it?
That's one thing they do.
Right, they do go blind.
They go into purgatory or something. for something.
Some weird other punishment. But I think if I'd even had a conversation with someone about it, it probably would have, you know, calmed it down for me, but I wasn't talking about it with anyone. It's just acting out.
Interesting. All right, let's see. Let's talk to Kelly, who's 25. What's up, Kelly?
Hi, how are you?
We're good. You're on with Alanis Morissette. Phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191.
Hi.
Big fan. I have kind of a strange question I just wanted to ask
Alanis something really quick. I'm coming to see your concert with Kristen Chenoweth very soon.
Oh, cool.
Wondering what your involvement with that's going to be.
I'm just a huge fan of Wicked, so I've been obsessed with the character Elphaba, and my friend Debbie Ford introduced me to the whole Wicked world. And
who's Debbie Ford?
She's an author and a workshop leader. She's the woman who wrote a book called Dark Side of the Light Chasers and has the Integrative Coaching Institute in San Diego. Anyway, she introduced me to the whole Wicked world and was really
the
obsessed
book or
with
the
it.
Or the play?
Both. Well, the play mostly, yeah. And then the book shortly after. But so obsessed with Elphaba, basically. And then I was in contact with Kristen Chenoweth through the people that I work with, and they were so sweet to invite me to sing, I think it's the song For Good, with Kristen on February 26th at Disney Hall.
Wow. And Kristen is the Good Witch.
She played Glinda, yeah.
Was she the original Glinda?
The original Glinda.
You know, you could do Elphaba.
It'd be great.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
I got plans for you.
We'll talk.
Is anybody, I maybe can't talk about it, but somebody should be working on that. Have you seen both versions in New York with the current Elphaba?
I actually didn't catch Kristen, which was, you know, devastating to me, but I've seen it twice in New York.
It's a great play.
So beautiful.
So, Kelly, what's up?
Okay, well, this kind of falls into what you were just talking about with the religious influences on young girls' sexual activity. Mm-hmm. And into my early adulthood, I find that I cannot achieve orgasm when masturbating unless I've put myself into a fantasy situation with either extremely obese men or put myself in a rape situation or anything that in real life I wouldn't really enjoy, I guess.
Do you have sexual relationships with guys now?
Yes, I'm in a committed relationship. It's been
everything's going
years.
Okay.
Everything is going fine. We fight, but we just moved from our hometown to here.
And do you have orgasm with him?
Yes, on occasion. I think like typical women.
And are you able to sort of be present in that relationship when you're sexual?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I mean, so it's just really when you're masturbating, yeah. You notice these funky fantasies that are sort of fetishistic.
It's always been that way, and I've always kind of been uncomfortable with it, but I allow myself to go there so that I can get the job done.
Very practical.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You're not alone.
Not alone.
No, I think you're definitely not alone.
Oh, no. People go into funky fantasies when they're by themselves.
I feel very dirty afterwards, and I don't feel dirty about masturbation, but I feel dirty that I have to.
That you have to go there in your head.
Yeah, to imagine myself being forced to have sex to enjoy it, or.
Do you have a You have a boyfriend, right? I'm sorry, yeah. I wasn't listening very well. Is this something you could talk about with him?
I've talked about it with him before, and it's not anything that I'd even want to enact. I don't think that in my real...
No, just in terms of sharing with him your feelings about what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Something like this.
That.
And so I have found that because I experienced similar things as I was younger, and the more intimate I would become with my partner, the more I felt like I could be a little bit... It's almost like I took what was happening in real life, and I merged the two together because it wasn't like what I was thinking about when I was masturbating was a isolated, shameful experience. It was almost like I could talk about it and be a little bit more present in my day-to-day life.
So, this is an interesting point, which is that's where some of that stuff comes from, is it sort of split off parts of yourself.
Like two selves.
Yeah, and if you can integrate that in, that's a more healthy self.
Yeah, and it speaks to, and I agree that it does speak to what we were just talking about having this perception of ourselves as these whores, and it's the,
right.
You know, that's our role and our sexuality with these men. So,
well, I grew up learning that sex was bad and sex would send me to hell, and you know, I taught Bible study and taught other kids to think that way, and I just kind of feel like it messed me up a little.
But isn't that thing again where you felt powerless and traumatized by these sort of images of what sexuality was drives you right towards it.
Right, and that's the precedent that was set. So it's I have found that as I get older, I've redefined what sexy is and what turns me on. So it's shifted a little bit, but it's, you know.
You want her to read this book?
Yeah, there's that book that I can't recommend enough is Sexual Healing Journey by Wendy Maltz, because she talks about when we have something happen in our early years, and I don't know if you had sexual trauma as a young person, but... you know, that's the precedent that's set. That's what sexy is, being raped, being attacked, being taken advantage of, you know, whatever the term is. That becomes what turns you on, and then it takes a lot of work to redefine and reframe what can continue to turn you on. It doesn't need to be kind of dark and violent and wounding in whatever way.
Another question for Alanis. Liz, 18.
Hi, I'm so excited to talk to you. So Alanis, yours was the first, Jagged Little Pill was the first CD I remember buying, and I've listened to it all through my youth. And so,
cool.
Thank you for that. And also, let's see, there's a track on that I just found out on my, Jagged Little Pill, I'm nervous, sorry, Beyond These Crowded Streets by Dave Matthews. Did you do the last song on that CD?
Is it called Spoon?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't know what you're talking about.
I've never heard of the track. yes, that was me. That was a really fun experience. We just flew to New York and had some fun in the studio.
I love that song, and I don't have the case to the CD anymore since I've had it so long, but I was listening, and I just thought that sounded like you, so.
Yeah, that is. It was fun.
Thanks, Liz.
Well, I have one more question for you, Drew.
Okay.
Do you know much about, I'm really into nutrition and kind of alternative, like Eastern medicinal stuff. I was wondering what you thought about the Eat Right for Your Blood Type diet.
I know of no evidence that stands up to scientific scrutiny, and that has come up and come and gone. And so far, I've not noticed that people are living forever on that or having any magical effects on their quality of life. Vicky, 24. They think you've struck a chord here with what you're talking about, female sexuality. Vicky, what's up?
Hi, I just first of all want to say hi to Alanis and just say that I'm a big fan and I really love her music and her lyrics. So
thanks, thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, Dr. Drew, I don't know, I feel like I need some kind of professional opinion. I am 24, I'm still a virgin. I was a Christian, I've been a Christian for like 12 years, and I've always wanted to wait to have sex till I was married. But like now it's hard, you know? And, like, I was telling the guy that answered the phone that for a long time I thought sex was dirty, too, because I was sexually abused when I was young. And I don't know, like, I feel like I know God's done a lot for me, but I feel like I need some kind of, like, professional diagnosis on myself.
When you've been sexually abused, that is something that needs treatment. That's not something that goes away. That affects how your brain develops.
Yeah, well, like, I went to a psychiatrist when I was young. God, I was like 12 or something, but I don't remember it being effective, you know? Like the girl that called in earlier that said she just said what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
You know, like I really wouldn't talk about anything. But now I'm 24 and like I feel like, I don't know, like there's something still there, you know?
Vicky.
Yeah.
Sexual abuse affects how your brain develops. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. And the only way that can... Why?
No, I understand why, but what do you do, you know? Like
it depends on how it's manifesting in you, but you need treatment.
See, like and I thought I sometimes I think I'm over it, but like sometimes
No, Vicky. The fact that you don't think about it, the fact that it's not a prominent memory does not mean it didn't affect your brain development. It did.
Yeah.
And that needs to be treated. Alanis just talked rather vividly about this feeling of being sort of disconnected or parts of self split off from other. That's what happens. How you regulate emotionally is forever changed by that experience.
Yeah.
And there are ways professionals can get in there and rewire things.
Well, like I feel like I fit the mold that everyone's talking about.
No, you're of course, because you're there. And so let's go. There's professionals well-trained all over the place. I mean, find somebody with a PhD or a PsyD or an MD who does therapy and go in there and start talking. And there are all kinds of various interventions these days. I mean, sometimes it's EMDR, these eye movement therapies. Mm. Sometimes it's reading books, like Alanis is recommending Sexual Healing Journey, which I now have to read because if I'm going to start recommending it, I got to read it.
Yeah.
And so, and realize, just get going. Don't spend a lot of time spinning your wheels thinking, why can't I or am I? Or yes, you are. You're officially, I certify you as needing treatment. Go ahead and go get it.
Go for it.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I bet she has an eating disorder too. Vicky?
Yeah?
Any eating disorder with all this too?
You know, for a while when I was
playing just saying, it all kind of goes together. I'm sure it's there. I would not necessarily though, Vicky, because it's not been a prominent part of your syndrome, I wouldn't go get an eating disorder specialist. Just go with somebody who has any degree of expertise to treating trauma and sit down and talk and go regularly. Alanis Morissette's in here, 1-800-LOVE-191. She has struck a chord talking to young women about virgin whores. Is that what we were talking about?
Well, there's so many labels. That's just one of them.
Give me another couple of labels. Just so you can, I know what we're talking about.
Oh, my God.
Sex is dirty.
Sex is dirty. You know, I'm a slut. I'm a whore. What else? What are the labels?
Of course.
I'm blanking under the gun here.
Guys don't do this to themselves.
Mm-mm.
And nor do they do that to other men. I mean, women also do it to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of the stuff that you guys put on yourself comes from either yourself or other women. Because guys are just fine.
You know what? I am learning that. I went to this amazing workshop led by Alison Armstrong. It's celebrating men, satisfying women. And it's like about 10 days of curriculum. It's been so profound for me. And realizing so much about the what's going on with me and whatever I've taken personally within my relationships with men. 98% of the time wasn't even what they were thinking anyway.
No.
It's my own.
Oh, guys are very...
thing.
Guys... Thinking, yeah. Guys, please.
Well,
come
they
on.
Do, but they're thinking about something specific that has nothing to do with
nothing.
What I'm taking it personally for.
No, nothing. Very simple. As I did some research with a guy who did functional MRI scans on men and women looking at visual sexual stimuli, and he said, look, men are like a box with a switch in it. That's how the man in my old mind works. Women, flight deck of a 747.
Well, we have this diffuse awareness. We can be doing 50 things at once.
Much more evolved. You know? Flight deck 747. Okay. All right. So Alanis Morissette in here with me tonight. We'll be right back.
Loveline is coming back. Call 1-800-LOVE-191. Operators are standing by.
Loveline will be back in a minute.
Alanis Morissette in here on Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. I would take one quick call, and then we're going to hear Wunderkind from Narnia. But first, this is Lisa, 26.
Hi. Alanis, I'm so happy to talk to you. I think you're so cool. I mean, I wish you were bi or something.
How about just straight gay? How about gay?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay. Right on.
I really particularly like Under Rug Swept. The songs really really reach out to me, like especially like so unsexy. I feel like that a lot of the times and have a hard time not abandoning myself and taking things personally. And
so great.
I really like, you know, that you really speak on an intellectual level and you're not afraid to use your brain too much.
Thanks. It's fun to use the brain.
Yeah.
She's not afraid she's going to wear it out.
As long as it doesn't drive the car, you know?
I wanted to ask you a question about that song, You Owe Me Nothing in Return.
Mm-hmm.
Is that serious how you would want a relationship to be, or is that a little bit too much, or is that...
It would be my aspiration to be able to do that, and I'm getting much better at it. But, you know, I wouldn't want to expect something in return, but I definitely would want to make sure that I could express my needs and be with someone who would want to, you know, partner up with me in both of us getting our needs met. So it's not so much that, you know, I'm just going to be of service to you and completely abandon and forget about myself. It's more that this is what my intention is to come into the room to be there for you, but also keeping in mind that I'm also in the room and that there would be a nice kind of mutuality or reciprocity on certain levels that would be according to what I would want, you know. So definitely not forgetting about yourself, no.
Mutuality is a really important thing that I think gets left out of a
Yes, people jump right on into rescuing and other sort of selfless behaviors, which are really just another kind of pathology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and having trouble setting boundaries. I have a hard
time. So you've had some treatment, Lisa, right?
What's that?
You've had a little treatment?
Yeah, I've had a little. Well, I have had some treatment, and I have a master's degree in counseling. So.
There you go. Well,
that's why I tried to talk like a somewhat of a know-it-all or something. So,
how about we hear an Alanis song?
That would be cool.
All right, this is Alanis. Take us out. Okay, Lisa, thank you.
This is a song from the Chronicles of Narnia, and it's written from the perspective of Lucy, the young lead character, and it's called Wunderkind.
Toward you, blink just.
Unmistakable Alanis. Beautiful.
Thank you.
And we're going to hear yet one more song. We hear the song I'm All Excited About, the track from DeLovely.
You're so cute. I love that you love that song.
I'm all excited about that. Okay, let's go back some, not exactly hard balls, but fast curve balls.
Okay.
Chanel, 19.
Hi.
Hey, what's happening there? You're on with Alanis Morissette.
Hi, I love you, Alanis. I just want to say that off the bat. You helped me through my childhood and made me the independent woman that I am today.
Nice.
Well, my question is about female ejaculation.
Okay,
I've done it twice, but for some reason I can't do it, like, again. I'm trying, but I don't know how to do it.
Did you like it those times?
Yes, I did.
Well, it tends to be, for most women, one of those things that just kind of comes upon you. It's very difficult for them to describe it or to control it. So it's something that, was it with the same guy?
Yes.
And you're still with him?
Yes.
And you're still trying to figure it out?
Yeah.
You want some magic? I don't have any magic advice for you. But I have talked to a lot of women that do this and do it sometimes and other times and can kind of control it. But I rarely find women who can reproducibly do this when they want to. It's sort of just something that they kind of get into it. It's a certain place, a certain rhythm, and pow, it happens.
Is there any advice you can give me as far as how I can?
Well, how did it happen the two times it did happen?
Well, I guess in a certain position, I'm better. But even in that position again, I can't, I don't know, for some reason it won't happen, you know?
And what position is that?
Doggy.
And how long did it take before that happened, those two times that it did?
Like, it happens really fast when it does happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have to keep practicing and figure it out.
I guess.
You know, it's one of these things, Chanel, that it's like trying to slow your heart rate down. It's a visceral function. It's hard to kind of get a specific technique around that. I'm sure there are people out there that have all kinds of ideas about it. But in my experience, it has been just something that you kind of figure out and you get to it and you can kind of reproduce it. But it's not easy.
I've tried reading books and I've tried watching videos about it. But like,
Chanel's very serious about this.
I'm messing around.
You really want this back.
I really do.
Well, it seems like your boyfriend needs to be as spirited about this as you do. Is he as into this as you are?
He is, very much so.
All right, so keep at it. You'll figure this out. Maybe take the heat off a little bit, not be quite
so
focused.
Not so much pressure.
Not so much pressure. That may be part of the problem. All right, Alanis Morissette in here for Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. And for the next break, I want to hear Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love. We're going to do that the end of the next break. But for right now, we're going to take a little commercial break. Again, the phone number, 1-800-LOVE-191. Alanis Morissette after this.
Excuse me?
Loveline's coming back in a minute.
Yo, don't go nowhere.
Last few minutes in here with Alanis Morissette. I hope you will come back because this 2 hours is just not enough of Alanis.
So great. This has been fun for me. Tell me.
This is Joy 19.
Hi, Alanis. Hey. I love you so much, first off, off the bat. I went to your concert when I was 10 years old, and a church lady gave me the money because I was too poor to go.
Wow.
Isn't that special?
Yes, it's very
Don't
special.
Even.
but my question was, I've been having sex with my boyfriend for about 6 months, and just recently, he's been having this, like, after he comes, it's like lime green. It's not pre-cum, it's like after.
After
discharge.
Nice.
And so I'm thinking he cheated on me and got something.
I hope not. That is a possibility, but I'm hoping it's just some sort. Sometimes blood gets mixed in. It can look kind of brownish, even possibly greenish. And there can be other sources of infection, like infections in the prostate. They're not specifically a sexually transmitted disease, but he does need to see a doctor.
Because I read something that said that it could be gonorrhea, so I was really just like...
Yeah, gonorrhea, the discharge from gonorrhea, though, is not specifically after intercourse. It's a burning all the time, and the discharge comes out sort of, you know, randomly.
Because I was tested recently, and I don't have anything. That's why I was really dumbfounded about
it. I doubt it's gonorrhea. I bet you it's prostatitis or epididymitis, but he needs to be seen, okay?
Okay, thank you. Hey, Alanis, thank you so much. I love you, and we want Adam back, please.
Hi, Troy, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Galen, 19.
First of all, Alanis, I'm a big fan of your music. I think your words are very bold and very powerful, and I respect that.
Thanks.
But this is a question when you played God in Dogma, it was a very small part, but you were very known for it. How did it make you feel when they asked you to play the role of God?
Well, nice. I actually was communicating with Kevin Smith at the time, who directed it and wrote it. And he had very generously asked me to just check the script out and see if there was anything that I wanted to play in there. And I was writing supposed former infatuation junkie. I was in the middle of writing that record. So I said I wouldn't be able to do it, unfortunately. And then at the last minute, he had a cameo of God. And he said, is there any chance that you'd want to... you know, maybe come check this out. It won't take a long time. And I said yes, because I love him so much. And that's
Kevin
really...
Kevin Smith or God?
Well, both. But God is also a woman, so I can't say him. But yes, Kevin Smith is... I just think he's such a genius. So I said yes, absolutely anything.
Very good. This now is Kelly, 23. Kelly?
Hi, Dr. Drew. Hi, Alanis.
Hi.
Kelly.
Quick question. When I was 14, I was raped. And after that, I was... pretty promiscuous for a little while, and I met one guy, and I kind of fucked him for like a year, and I got pregnant, and since the night I conceived, I have not had sex at all since then, and I'm almost 24 right now, and I've been to a psychologist, and my life is good. You know, I'm going to school. My son is great. Like, things are good, but I cannot have sex. And I just need to, like, get over it. I almost feel like if I put myself in, like, a rape situation again, that it would alleviate.
Well, that's sort of what, you know, again, this is back to that same motivational impulse we were talking about earlier, where people go towards the things that they find horrifying and inducing powerless feelings. By the same token, you either go that direction and become hypersexual, or you shut down completely. And you said you had been treated? You saw a psychologist?
I did, but there was some other issues that I went, that were more pertinent.
Like what?
I've been bulimic for about 10 years, and so that was kind of on the top of my list. I'm really tired of that.
Raped at 14 more often than not means that there was some sexual abuse before that. So what happened before 14?
Nothing.
No physical abuse?
Nope.
Nothing before that.
Now my dad wasn't around, but I mean, as far as abuse, like I had a good childhood.
Okay. It's just very common when somebody gets victimized in their mid-teens. It's something before that sort of set them up for that. No?
No, I you know what? I think what set me up, like looking back in retrospect, I feel like I was in the situation I was in because I felt like this person was giving me attention at first, so...
Well, that's sort of typical of a young, you know, how a child reacts to somebody who's a perpetrator. They show them lots of attention, even love, and makes them feel wanted and desired and pal. All of a sudden, they're in a sexual experience and they're being traumatized. Well, Kelly, there's really not much we can say here except that you've had a major trauma. You have a major, life-threatening diagnosis, bulimia. Would you suggest you see an eating disorder specialist?
Eating disorder specialist.
And sexual issues are often part of the eating disorder syndrome, so it's something that's kind of will get dealt with all at once. Now I'm going to have to transition from that to DeLovely, so I'm very excited about
it. Great segue.
This is something I've been waiting to hear all night, and I didn't realize it was on the collection album, and I'm so happy it is. So Alanis has granted me the opportunity to play this for you all. It's called Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love. Alanis Morissette.
But that's why birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it. Lithuanians, and let's do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. The Dutch in old Amsterdam. Not to mention the Finns. Folks in Siam do it. Think of Siamese twins. Some Argentines without means do it. People say in Boston even beans do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Cold Cape Cod clams against their wish do it. Eating lazy jellyfish do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Electric eels I might add to it. Though it shocks them, I know. Why ask if Shad do it? Way to bring me Shad Row in shallow shoals. English souls do it. Goldfish in the privacy of bowls do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. The dragonflies in the
Alanis Morissette. The new CD is The Collection. I got to share with you, I was watching the film with my daughter and her friends, and about three measures, it was my second view of the film, and about three measures in, I asked some of my daughter's friends, do you recognize that voice? They immediately knew it was you.
Really?
Yeah, and I had trouble because, you know, you're a character in the thing, and you're kind of right. swept into the whole film, and it took me a while to get when they were like, oh, that's Alanis Morissette.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me tonight. We're going to take yet another break. We'll be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Well, that about does it for Loveline, Alanis. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
in.
You.
Do not be a stranger and bring your lovely new husband along with you next time. He's a great guy. He hasn't been on the show in like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, he's overdue.
And it may be longer. Yes? 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And those of you interested in listener Loveline, again, it's Lauren. Oh, excuse me. It's producer Anne. I'll keep Lauren off. I was sending it to both of you just so you wouldn't have to get all the letters yourself. She needs to read them anyway. 5901 Venice Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 900-334. Let us know why we should pick you to be a listener Loveline, and we'll set those dates up and coming. So keep listening. And thank you, Alanis. And tomorrow night, Jay Hernandez. So until then, this is Dr. Drew saying good night and stay well. Hardballs.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.